Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. We've got a little bit of a last minute live today. We are going live as it is about 5 p.m. Central on November 18th here. You've got myself, Elijah Evans, you've got Dylan Barnes, my co-host, and we're going live because we were trying to figure out when to record today. And ended up getting to the point where we, you know, we're looking at things and we were like, yeah, let's just wait for the 40-man decisions. The deadline as of about a minute from where, as we are recording right now, to add players to the 40-man roster ahead of the Rule 5 draft in a couple weeks just happened. And some really interesting decisions announced here by the White Sox. And we're still trying to kind of figure it out and think through it here on air. So bear with us here as we're kind of giving a true live raw reaction today, because the White Sox just announced earlier, you know, about 10 minutes ago, that not only was there a trade reported, not by the White Sox, but a trade reported that relief pitcher Chris Murphy would be coming over from Boston. And then the White Sox themselves reported about 10 minutes ago that the contracts were selected of Tanner McDougal, who was the, you know, the one what we consider to be guaranteed add to the 40-man, and then Duncan Davitt, who was added this past offseason from the Rays. And then they also announced that Fraser Ellard had been placed on the voluntary retired list. So really interesting situation. This puts the White Sox roster at 37. The interesting aspect to consider, if you've listened to us normally, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, like there's a number of prospects that are now eligible to be taken in the Rule 5 draft who might get taken in the Rule 5 draft. So that's the over. We're going to get into all this. But Dylan, what is your just initial reaction here as we kind of are 10 minutes out now, you know, from the news of how the White Sox went about this 40-man crunch?
You know, I think you said it like off the top. You know, Tanner McDougal was the obvious one. And if you didn't expect him to get protected, then, I mean, very simply put, you were wrong. Like, Tanner McDougal was going to get protected. He's going to be on probably the big league roster very quickly in 2026. But then Duncan Davitt, he was one that I could see going either way, but I like that they protected him. He's got a funky pitch mix. And, you know, he was one of the pieces in return for Adrian Hauser from the Rays this past deadline. And, you know, those two being the only two, I think is a bit surprising. You know, no Shane Murphy, no Peyton Paulette, no Mason Adams is the big one. But I think that, you know, if you can sneak all those guys through the Rule 5 draft, I think that you will see at least one, if not multiple of them, be on the White Sox in 2026. Because, you know, Mason Adams, we saw how good he was in the minor leagues before popping with TJ last spring. And Peyton Paulette is really the one that I'm most puzzled about, just because I feel like he's an obvious candidate to get taken in by any team, where you can just stash him in the bullpen for 90 days and then you have him. I don't know why the White Sox didn't want to do that, because you have a crap ton of bullpen roles that should be flipped to a younger guy or just a better arm. And Peyton Paulette was the most obvious eternal addition to that bullpen. And, you know, I don't know.
It sounds like in the chat, Rony Hernandez is the return for Chris Murphy.
Ooh.
I don't love that. I don't love that.
Not really.
Yeah. I mean, I don't love that. I think.
Can we stop trading young
for Boston random relievers that are kind of irrelevant?
To the Boston Red Sox? Yeah. I don't love that.
Yeah, Rony Hernandez is somewhat of a limited upside guy. So for those, just a little more breakdown here. Chris Murphy is the trade acquisition today. The Red Sox, obviously, everyone dealing with the 40-man roster crunch today. Today's deadline created a situation for every team where they need to get roster spots clear. They need to add their prospects to protect them, right? So the White Sox were not the only team in this situation. Boston was one of those who needed to clear some spots rather than being able to necessarily add purely like the White Sox have done. You know, the White Sox have guys they could clear, but I think that they are prioritizing adding first, then you can clear guys later. Boston needing to clear reliever Chris Murphy. The White Sox trade Rony Hernandez, young catcher, in the 20-year-old catcher in the system who spent the last year and a half in single A. Definitely an interesting catcher there. Obviously, there's some rawness to his game. Still has not quite tapped into his power, but an interesting piece who, nonetheless, if anything, he was solid young catching depth and one of the only young catchers kind of to look at in the system for a guy who's, a veteran reliever, honestly, and a journeyman. So interesting.
He's not a journeyman. He's 27. So like
20,
he's not like Cam Boozer last year where he was like 33
right.
or something. And we traded a DSL all-star for him in Yoiker Fajardo. And now he's like, I want to say the number 11 prospect in the Red Sox system. So that one was one where I could tell initially, like that probably wasn't going to go the White Sox way. But this one, Rony Hernandez he's buried in the catching depth. And, with Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro, it's going to be tough to carve out a catching job in the White Sox organization. But, he was probably going to be like in my just miss category of the top 30 because, he does have some upside and, the bat was, it was coming around. There wasn't a whole lot of power in it, but he's a big guy. He was like, I think he's 6'2". He's a pretty hefty catcher. And, you would hope that if he can tap into more power, the overall profile would look a lot better, but I'm not sure, but getting another bullpen arm who can slot into the mix and especially being a lefty, I don't hate it, but I also don't love it.
Yeah, I don't love it. I don't think it's probably fairly inconsequential, things considered. But I do think it's an interesting trade. I'm just the bigger thing for me is the 40-man, man. I mean, McDougal's the one you had to protect, right? Tanner McDougal is going to have a chance to be in the White Sox rotation as early as maybe not opening day. It could be, honestly, but sometime fairly early this season, you're going to see Tanner McDougal in Chicago in a prominent role going forward, potentially. I don't get the not protecting any of the other three arms, man. I really don't. I think that I think Peyton Paulette's the type of guy who will get taken in the Rule 5 draft. And it's like no team that was the second worst in baseball last year should have anybody taking the Rule 5 draft, right? Like you shouldn't be in a position where anybody on this roster is susceptible to being taken in that draft, right? I think with you can look at some of the other guys, and there's a little bit more of a question there for me with Murphy or Adams if they would even get taken. Paulette is the guy where like the most common Rule 5 draft picks are relief pitchers with upside who, there's no damage in a team that trusts their pitching infrastructure, looks at a guy who was a second round pick 3 years ago and says, this is a guy with the arm talent who has shown pretty solid numbers in AAA as a reliever. Like he can be in our big league bullpen on opening day. And if he really sucks through 2 months, sure, he goes back to the White Sox, but there's a really good chance Peyton Paulette gets taken in this draft and he ends up being a quality reliever for another team for years to come, potentially, honestly. I mean, I just, that's the one I think of the three that just really doesn't make sense to me. I think you look at the guys that were eligible to be taken. You had some younger guys, right? Samuel Zavala, Aldrin Batista, those guys were never going to be taken in the Rule 5 draft, right? There's a number of those international guys who are just too young and haven't reached a high enough level to be able to, to have a team really say, oh, we're going to put them on the 40-man to start the season. With a Peyton Paulette, like, this is not some late round like find. Like I think the slight logic with Murphy or with Adams might be, these are kind of our deep flyers, right? These are guys we took in late rounds. They're probably still not high upside players, right? Both Adams and Murphy are more of a floor guy versus ceiling guy. So I can see that a little bit. I think with Mason Adams, that's an interesting one because, that's our highest ranked prospect among these guys we're talking about, aside from McDougal, obviously. And Mason Adams, like I think that's more because of the injury, because he's coming off TJ. I think another team trying to get through him and just trying to the idea of like trying to have a guy go through rehab and then have to go straight into the big leagues. It is a tough situation. So I can kind of see some of that reasoning. And that was one of the ones I could see going either direction, but I don't know how you think. The Paulette one really just shocks me. I think above all else, that's the one where I'm not sure what I see there. And I'm not sure what the vision is there, honestly.
Yeah, you know, you said it again in the like the first couple minutes of that, but like the fact that the White Sox were the second worst team in baseball this year and aren't adding their second round pick from 3 years ago to the 40 man when he hasn't been great. He hasn't been everything that you would want a second round pick to be, but he also hasn't been horrible. Like I thought he did enough to be given a shot at the big league level. And, you know, let's say that, you know, he didn't work out. You can easily DFA him and try and clear him through waivers, but now he's going to go into the Rule 5 draft. And I think that a team who trusts their pitching development, and control has always been an issue for Paulette, you know, even dating back to his days as a starter, that was the reason why he got moved into the bullpen. You know, I think that a team can look at his just raw stuff and say, there's characteristics here that we like, and we're going to try and slot him in. We're going to try and find him a role in our bullpen. And, you know, it's probably not going to be a great team where, you know, their bullpen is set and they're going to be competing for, you know, a playoff spot. But I think Peyton Paulette can go to a sort of middle of the pack to bottom of the pack team where, you know, they're not going to compete and they're just looking to rebuild and get new arms in their system. I think Peyton Paulette is a perfect candidate for any of those teams. And it's just really puzzling why he wasn't protected.
Yeah, I don't get the Paulette one. I really don't. But even when I try to like think and boil down the Adams or the Murphy, right? Like, who's to say a team won't look at Mason Adams and say, we're going to put him on the IL for 2 months and then he could still get 3+ months of big league time with us, right? I think for a rebuilding team, particularly if you look at it, you know, some organizations that are at the lower tier of Major League Baseball right now, like why would you not, you know, a guy that's had that much success, I think there's some logic to, hey, we'll get this guy through his rehab and then get him in the big leagues. And if he absolutely sucks, then fine, he can go back to the White Sox. But like, what's really the downside in taking a shot at a guy who is coming off of an injury, you put him on the IL for 2 months, and then you still can rehab start him in AAA, even though, you know, the 40 man, the Rule 5, right? Like the whole logic is, oh, you've got, you know, the point of the Rule 5 draft, right, is when you take a player from there, you have to keep him on your active roster at the big league level. That doesn't apply to rehab starts, though, right? And you have to think about, from a guy like Mason Adams, if he spends the first 2 months of the season on the 60-day IL recovering from TJ, and then another team works him through that process, they give him, you know, a handful of rehab starts in AAA, but also just to get AAA innings because he's a guy that would have needed AAA innings anyways, then you could have him in the big leagues by July and he could spend the last 3 months of the season on a big league roster and maybe finding a big league role for some team. So I don't know. And then you look at Shane Murphy, right? The last guy to mention of those main ones that we kind of pointed out. And Shane Murphy just came off of one of the best seasons in all of minor league baseball. So yeah, he's not a high upside guy. And yeah, he throws 90, right? But like, this is a guy who just dominated Double A all season and finished the year in Triple A. And there's teams out there that could say, hey, he can be our long reliever this season and then start in the bigs. And, you know, he might just be a funky, fun swingman type and at the big league level, right? So I'm just really curious. The thing that makes me wonder too is like, even with, so you add Chris Murphy, you add Tanner McDougal and Duncan Davitt to the 40 man. Originally it was at 35 before today. That brings it up to 38. And this is by my calculation. I could be off on this, but I believe it was at 35 going into today. Obviously the Chris Murphy trade is not official yet, but assuming the Chris Murphy trade, those two guys added, that brings it to 38. The Fraser Eller retirement brings it down to 37. Even with a Rule 5 pick of our own coming in, you know, in the 2 weeks in December, there's still two spots there. So like, what's the downside of adding those two spots to two of those young guys? And then when you do add free agents, right, there's plenty of guys that can still be DFA'd on this roster. And that's the part that I just don't fully see. And I'm curious to just see how it plays out here in the next few weeks. Cause like, there's still a number of guys when you look at this 40 man that I think you could DFA tomorrow and it really wouldn't hurt. So I'm honestly a little confused and I'm curious to see how the rest of this shakes out just going forward into the offseason.
Yeah. And there's, like you mentioned, like the dead weight on the 40 man. Well, I don't want to call it dead weight, but like Ben Cowles and Derek Hill, what are they doing here? Like, yeah, Derek Hill is fast. He's got legs and he can probably play center field when Luis Robert inevitably gets traded. But like, I would rather see Peyton Paulette or Shane Murphy or Mason Adams on the 40 man over those two guys. And we can go into the bullpen. There's maybe four names in that bullpen where I would say, yeah, you know, you're better than Peyton Paulette and you deserve a shot over him. Outside of that, man, there's not a lot of guys who I would say, yeah, you know, I would trust you to hold a lead and be on the White Sox in 2027, or even like at the trade deadline in 2026. Like, you can look in that bullpen and you can find guys who they're probably not going to be here long term. And, you know, maybe Peyton Paulette isn't either, but you never know if you don't give him a shot. And I think that's the thing that is going to bug me the most, is if he gets taken and he does well somewhere else, I wanted him to get a shot. And, you know, you're not going to know how it pans out until after, obviously. But I don't know. I feel like Peyton Paulette should have been protected. And, you know, for all we know, none of these three could be taken in the Rule 5 draft. And this entire conversation is, it can just float into the void and be forgotten. But at the same time, man, there are teams who are trying to find the next Shane Smith. Like, the White Sox did well at the top of the Rule 5 draft last year. And, you know, there are going to be teams who want quality pitchers, or in this case, only pitchers for the White Sox. But, like, I feel like you can find a team at least somewhere in the Rule 5 draft where they could use an arm like Mason Adams, Shane Murphy, Peyton Paulette. So I it's just puzzling. I think that's going to be the word of the day for me, is just puzzling.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm a little confused. Before I want to kind of get further into some of these thoughts, just how it affects the rest of the offseason. Frazier Ellard retiring, man, is really just a bummer. Yeah. Like, I'm hoping he's okay. More than before anything else, like, baseball aside, just wishing him the best. Like, these things happen. We've seen guys voluntarily retire at various occasions, even being early in their career. Ellard, though, is a young guy who was really just getting his toes wet. I know he's had a bunch of injuries over the past couple seasons, so, you know, it could be injury related. We have no idea at this point, but honestly, I'm wishing the best for Ellard, because I still thought he'd be in contention for a rotation, for a bullpen spot this season, honestly. Yeah. So it's a weird wrinkle there with, you know, someone who still was on the big league roster for a good amount of this season, back and forth from Charlotte, and, you know, would have had a chance to get some innings in Chicago in 2026 and is now just out of baseball completely.
Yeah, it's weird. And, you know, it's not like he wasn't going to be able to get a shot in 2026. So I hope it's nothing too bad. I hope he's okay personally, like you said. But, like, I feel like Frazier Ellard probably could have competed for a bullpen spot or won a bullpen spot out of spring training next year. And, you know, it sucks, because he had good stuff. It was just finding command and locating pitches. And, you know, it sucks that he's not going to be here. But, you know, at the end of the day, you just hope that he's okay as a person, because, like I said, at the end of the day, all of these guys are humans, and they just happen to be really good at throwing a baseball. So, you know, you hope for the best for Frazier Ellard. And, you know,
Yeah, wishing him the absolute best. I want to address this comment in the chat, because I think this is kind of what I wanted to get to next. Somebody in the chat asked, you know, are we overvaluing guys like Paulette and others that didn't get protected? What's the actual chance they get picked up? I don't think we're necessarily overvaluing. I think, yeah, our standards might be, you know, for right, the White Sox lens, right? Like, we might not be looking at these players quite the same way the league is, right? Like, there's some teams that probably look at Peyton Paulette and say, whatever. And there is teams like that. With that said, we're talking about a second round pick, and that's where that's where my brain just, like, this is a guy the White Sox gave over $2 million to out of the draft 3 years ago. It wasn't 7 years ago. It wasn't 6 years ago. You know, this is 3 years ago. He was the 62nd overall pick for the White Sox, and a guy who was expected to be a key piece of the rotation going forward, nonetheless, just a bullpen arm. Obviously, it didn't go that way throughout his minor league career. He transitioned into a relief role last year, but since he's transitioned into a relief role, has been exceptional, and has been a guy that has become one of the better relief prospects in the system, right? So you look at this season even, like, no, it wasn't perfect. The ERA on paper isn't beautiful. But this is a guy, a second-round pedigree, 24 years old. He pitched 64 and a third between double and triple this season with 86 strikeouts and 28 walks. Like, this guy could be a big league reliever. And I'm not saying he's going to be a back-end guy. He's not going to be – he might not be a, you know, a high-leverage big league arm, right? With that said, like, he can be a big league reliever tomorrow, and I think there's a really good chance that some team agrees with that sentiment and takes him in the Rule 5 drafts, just because there is a chance that he can just plug and play into a bullpen immediately. I think that when you look at the White Sox bullpen and you look at the options that you really trust going forward, I'm not, I don't see the reasoning to not have Peyton Pollett be part of that group. I think there's a number of pitchers on the 40-man roster right now that are going to be competing for bullpen spots who I would rather see that spot go to Peyton Pollett than a number of players on the 40-man still. Yeah, I mean, and right, that's not to discredit anybody else that got added too. Like, I think Duncan Davitt and Tanner McDougal were right, were good adds as well.
Exactly.
But I just am not sure. I'm just not sure where I see the reasoning of not adding Pollett, just given the fact that he could have competed for a bullpen spot out of camp this year.
Yeah, I think he's the highest likelihood of any of the guys who didn't get protected to be taken in the Rule 5 draft, just because, you know, Adams is coming off injury and Shane Murphy. I would be shocked if a team like picks him up and then has him on the 26 man for the full 90 days or however right. long it is. But, you know, with Pollett, like, you can hide a bullpen arm in a bullpen for yep. 90 days. And that's the thing that I'm going to come back to is Pollett doesn't have to throw every day, or he doesn't have to go out and win you a game every fifth day like a Mason Adams or a Shane Murphy. He can throw the seventh inning of a blowout win or blowout loss, and you can just do that for 3 months, essentially, and then you have control over him for the next 6 years. So it's just I don't really understand it. And yeah,
I like the way you explain that too, because I think with Pollett, like, he could be the eighth man in a bullpen right. and be the mop up guy while he continues to develop, while he continues to tinker with the pitch shapes and the mix and the way he attacks hitters. Like, there's teams that are not good and are willing to take, you know, have a bullpen guy who doesn't even pitch more than twice a week, but right. is still developing, still working on his craft, still has the pedigree of a second round pick, and then can be turned into something more going forward if they can get through a full season of, you know, him on the roster somewhat buried in the bullpen, right? Like you said there. So that's the one I just don't get. Yeah.
It's not even full season. Once you get past that 90 days, you can option him. Like, you get all their options.
Is that true?
I believe so.
I think you're right. Yeah. I'm just trying to,
I could be wrong there, but I think once you get past that 90 day period of him being on the 26 man roster, you gain all of their option years. I could be wrong there. It might not be for the first year, but I know in like the second year, I want to say you can option them.
Yeah. The second year. Yes, I believe. Okay. I think that the first year. So what I'm looking at, and this is what I thought, you know, so a Rule 5 draft picks are directly assigned to the drafting club's 26 man roster and must be placed on outright waivers in order to be removed from the 26 man roster in that season. Right.
Okay.
Should the player clear waivers, he must be offered back to his previous team for $50,000. It can be outrighted to the minors only if the original club does not wish to reacquire him.
Okay.
So, you know, he can be placed on the major league injured list, but must be active for the minimum of 90 days to avoid the restrictions in the next campaign. So that's where it's like, you could have, I don't know. I just think that, you know, it's interesting. And this is, somebody brings up the point of, like, maybe there's, you know, there could be making trades where you need 40 man spots available, 100%. But at that point, wouldn't you rather add one or two of these guys and protect them, knowing that you have players on that 40 man that you can remove when that time comes? So I do think some of the logic here is keeping some wiggle room on the 40 man, like someone mentioned in the comments. But, like, I think that somewhat undermines the fact that there's players on this roster you could remove. There really is. There's players on this roster you could remove. Oh, nice. And as we speak, Yoenis Gomez to the Rays, another 40 man roster, so, another player on the 40 man goes.
Yeah.
Out the door.
Let me try and find that.
You know, we're seeing this in the comments, so, you know, as we're live here, you know, we might not be exactly on time, but yeah, Daniel Alvarez Montes, who's a great reporter, and, you know, extra baseball. So, yeah, I mean, okay, there goes another guy off the 40 man. So that brings your 40 man back from 37 to 36.
What? Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot more that we're going to find out here in the next day or two. I'm not sure we're going to get all the answers tonight.
Chris Getz is having a busy day.
Yeah, there's a plan. I'm sure there is. We've gotten to, you know, what I will say here is, like, we have gotten to the place, at least myself, and I know what some White Sox fans do not agree with this and wouldn't see it this way, but, like, I'm at the place now where, like, I see the direction, generally speaking, this front office is going, and I think there is some intentionality behind everything happening. I right now we don't have answers, and we might not have answers today, but there's definitely got to be something more something more here than just, oh, okay, you know, this is, we're not going to protect these guys. There's got to be something more in the works here. Somebody just said there has to be a trade coming. Like, yeah, there's got to be something coming here. I don't know exactly what it is, and we'll figure it out, but really interesting. And one day, you know, just to sum it up, Rony Hernandez going to Boston for relief pitcher Chris Murphy. You've got Yohandris Gomez going to the Rays for something. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
You've got multiple prospects that we expected to be added potentially, not in, you know, not added to the 40 man. So I don't know.
And I would assume that this isn't for a guy, or that it is for a guy on the 40 man, because then if it wasn't for a guy on the 40 man, then I feel like you would protect one of Paulette, Murphy, Adams, but maybe they just don't value them as highly as we do. Maybe the White Sox just see something in Peyton Paulette or Mason Adams or Shane Murphy that can tell them, like, all right, yeah, we can lose this guy and we'll be fine. So I'm not sure, but I feel like it has to be for a guy who's on the 40 man. Would I be crazy for thinking that, or no?
I think so. I would think so, but it also could be clearing it up, and the White Sox are going to – I mean, you know, the thing is, like, this team has made it – they haven't hid the fact that, like, they are willing to take gambles on some flyer guys, right? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see two or three more 40-man crunch additions like a Chris Murphy, right, to fill out this roster.
Yeah.
There could be a number of other guys that teams are waiting to move – and need to get, you know, off their roster that we find out in the next few hours that there's players moved to the White Sox just to clear other teams' 40-man crunches. So I think there's got to be some more adding on the way if you're subtracting everything that's been subtracted so far without adding some of the other pieces that we thought might be added, right?
Yeah, and I just wonder what the return is for Gomez, because I felt like he had a real chance to crack 2026 in the rotation, because, I mean, he looked good down the stretch. And – like, yeah, it wasn't perfect, but he was also converting from a reliever back into a starter. And I mean, I think he was young too. He was 26. Yeah, he's 26. So I don't know. I feel
like, yeah. I mean, I'm also just looking around at other teams. Like the Cardinals, for example, added four prospects, including two of their recent high draft picks. They DFA'd one player, and they're at four. They're at exactly 40. The Guardians added four prospects to the roster, DFA'd one current player, exactly 40. I just, like, there's not a ton of logic in going anywhere below 39 at this point. Yeah. Like, I get going 39 because then you don't have to deal with anything come Rule 5, right? The White Sox are going to add someone in the Rule 5 again because of the success they had last year. But, like, I just am not sure. I mean, I'm looking around and just seeing the amount of people being added and taken off 40 mans. And then there's just a lot of players that, like, are still not on the roster here. I mean, assuming that depending on the Gomez trade, you've either got 37 or 36 or max 37 on the roster. So it seems like it doesn't really make a ton of sense to have only, you know, 36, 37, unless there's multiple trades coming here, which there could be, frankly. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it would not shock me if Chris Getz just said, you know what, today is the day where I'm doing trades, because I forget which. It was the Christian Mena and Dominic Fletcher deal that happened right after the Gregory Santos for Prelander Baroa. It was like both of those deals came out within like 15 minutes of each other. And that was prior to the 2024 season. So, you know, maybe he just gets in a trading mood and, you know, just starts calling up teams where he's like, hey, you want this guy? But I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting to see the Gomez return, because I feel like it would have to be somebody on their 40 man right now, because then it just makes no sense to clear more 40 man space if you're not going to add another guy on from the Rule 5 eligible guys. So I'm not sure. Let me check to see the Rays 40 man, because, I mean,
yeah, I'm trying.
Maybe see if we can predict anybody. I'm looking over and there's not many guys who I would say are like who match up value wise with a Yoenis Gomez. Maybe like an outfielder, Jake Mangum, maybe. I'm not sure. He's on their 40 man. He's probably, he might be blocked in that outfield. with, no, Johnny DeLuca is, I'm not sure. But yeah, this is going to be interesting. I feel like Yoenis Gomez was a guy where I wasn't sure what his value would look like for a trade, but yeah, that's an interesting move.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. There's a lot to consider here. We should do a little bit more kind of later this week or beginning of next week too, because yeah. I think we'll have a little bit more to kind of sift through here. We just wanted to go live and get something up here and get our thoughts out on the table here. But briefly, as we kind of wait for more news to set in here, what are your thoughts on just the start of free agency here and just what we've seen so far and how the White Sox might attack this market? We also, you know, more news today, 4 players accepted the qualifying offer. Yeah. Trent Grisham, Gleyber Torres, Shota Imanaga, and Brandon Woodruff all accepted the qualifying offer. From everything I've heard and just the industry and people that I've been chatting with, like, it does seem like there is a very large league-wide hesitance to give a long-term deal to the non-top-end guys. The top-end guys are going to get their money. They're going to get their deal, honestly, because that's just how it goes in this market. But it does seem like the mid-tier market is pretty weak right now. And there's a lot of teams that are very weary of giving out longer-term contracts to this mid-tier, mediocre free agent class, honestly. So a lot of 4 players accepted the QO. You know, we saw Josh Naylor be the only big signing so far. He signs for 5 years back to Seattle. Seemed like he loved being there. He wanted to stay there. But beyond that, like, hasn't been a ton of action, and it does seem like the market's going to take its time, and the big guys are really the focal point, which my thought is there, you know, if people are scared of some long-term money, I think the White Sox could capitalize on that a little bit and pull in a decent fish or two by being able to commit another year than some teams are willing to commit, because there's so little money on the books. Like, if guys want 3-4 year deals and most teams aren't wanting to give it to them, I'm okay with the idea of the White Sox giving an extra year to a player to get a good piece.
Yeah. And you know, you look at a guy who the White Sox have already been in contact with, Ryan O'Hearn. This is probably his last big payday. He can't gamble on himself on a 1-year deal, just given his track record. So I think that, you know, if teams aren't willing to give that 3rd or 4th year to a guy like Ryan O'Hearn, I think the White Sox could be a perfect fit for him, where, you know, signs with similar money, maybe a bit more, it's the White Sox tax, you know, not going to a good team, so you get a little bit more money. But, you know, I think that the White Sox and Ryan O'Hearn could match up well. You know, I think that maybe it's in like the 4-year, $65 to $70 million range, you know, something around there. I don't know exact contract specifics, but I feel like 15-ish million for O'Hearn sounds about right.
Yeah, I think O'Hearn's looking at like a 3. I mean, I think the difference would be like, can the Sox give it I don't think it's even that high, honestly. I had him at about 3 for 30 to 35. But I think the difference would be if the White Sox would be willing to give a 4th year, I think it would incentivize, you know, it would be the more pull. I don't think many teams are lining up to give 4 years to Ryan O'Hearn. So I think if you're going to go Ryan O'Hearn route, which I'm all for, I think that's one of the top targets in both of our eyes, of like a somewhat realistic, but still a legit ad. I think if you were to give him the 4th year, even if it's only 40 or so, I don't think it'd go past 4 for 40, 4 for 45, maybe. I think you could incentivize that deal by giving the extra year, because I'm not sure there's a market for more than 3 years for him.
Yeah, and you know, other guys, like I keep coming back to him, but Kazuma Okamoto from Japan, you know, if he's still on the market, I mean, he only has what, 90 days to sign with a team. If his market doesn't get going, I feel like he could be somebody that the White Sox turn to and say, hey, look, you know, we're willing to give you your money, but you know, we're willing to give you the years that you want, but you know, maybe it's at a little bit of a discount AAV than what he wanted. So, you know, the White Sox were in Japan to see him play an exhibition game. You know, we're not sure if it was to see him or see other players in the game, but the fact that they were there and know who Kaz Okamoto is a good sign. So I'm not saying that the White Sox are going to be deeply in talks with him, but you know, it's a good sign to see that they're in the mix with a lot of a name that's coming overseas and who is probably the second best Asian hitter coming over this year.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think it's possible. I still don't think it's super realistic. I've heard the market for him is pretty strong. Not that it's going to be a crazy large deal, but I think a lot of teams are going to want to give him a similar type of deal, in which case the White Sox probably don't compete with some of the higher-end teams they're wanting to sign him. I think there's still some other various targets that make some sense. Just looking at some more of this news, I mean, you know, there's a lot of teams protecting a lot of prospects right now, for sure. I mean, Andrew Painter obviously gets protected, but there's also some teams, you know, it's interesting, like the Phillies, for example, they're only at 33 people on the 40 man. So, you know, it does vary, and there's always logic behind that, but interesting to just see how each team is doing things a little bit differently right now. And with the White Sox obviously not protecting a couple of the guys that we thought they would, it'll be really interesting to see the Rule 5 draft. It's going to be fascinating to look at when that comes around, but yeah, in terms of free agency, man, like I think there's the market's taking its time. I think it's going to take its time. I think the QO changes some things. Having four players in that middle tier all off the board today and returning to their teams, like the outfield market, man.
Everson Pereira is the return for Yoenis Gomez.
Huh. Former highly regarded prospect. Yeah. Interesting.
I think he's 24. Let me look at their depth chart. Huh. He was a guy who I scrolled past, but I didn't think that he would necessarily match up with Yoenis Gomez in terms of value. Yeah, he's 24. They just traded for him this past year, or this past deadline from the Yankees. It's interesting. You know, he hasn't had the best Major League Baseball career, you know, negative 1.1.
So it is a 40-man for 40-man, though, right? Because he was on that 40-man already. Yeah.
But, you know, this is a guy who mashed in every level of minor league baseball, you know, even this year, you know, a 136 WRC plus with Tampa's AAA team and a 128 with New York's AAA team.
It's only played 50 big league games too.
Yeah. You know, I don't hate it. It's an outfielder. You need some outfield depth. So
it's an outfielder who could make the big league roster, honestly.
Yeah. I don't hate that at all. Yeah.
So so 40 man for 40 man, having it be Gomez and for Pereira, puts you at still back at 37, we think. Yeah. That's an estimate, but we think it should be 37 then. When you add the two guys, bring a couple in, interesting to see. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's around where I would value Yoenis Gomez, but I think that Pereira is a decent guy, you know, similar to a Curtis Meade, where, you know, highly rated prospect in like all throughout the minor leagues and hasn't performed well in the big leagues, and the White Sox are going to take a chance on him. And, you know, he's an outfielder. Again, warm bodies to play the outfield.
It's a flyer.
He's always good. Yeah. I believe he still has option. Yeah, he still has two more years of options. So I don't hate it. He's dealt with the strikeout at pretty much every level of his career, and that's been the main thing. You know, in 50 MLB games, 38.6% strikeout rate and an 8.5% walk rate. So the bat to ball skills are going to need to improve, but, you know, given how much he hit in minor league baseball, basically his entire minor league career, I think he's a decent flyer to take a chance on for a guy who you claimed off waivers in the middle of last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I think that's an interesting 40 man swap, you know, just swapping two guys, both in the 40 man, who both are fringe roster guys, but Pereira could definitely be a guy that makes the, you know, ends up getting some big league games this year in the outfield, especially with the status of the outfield being as uncertain as it is going forward. So, interesting one there. I know we both got to get going soon here. Any last thoughts just on the 40-man decisions and heading into free agency? I think we'll have to do another, you know, follow-up on all of this next week, because there's a lot of stuff that still seems like we're going to get some more info here coming in the next handful of days.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, this is about the time where the White Sox offseason starts to kick into gear. You know, two trades and the 40-man roster, you know, it's been a fun last hour or so. So, you know, hopefully the news doesn't stop here. And I feel like trading for Everson Pereira means that, you know, a Mike Tauchman or Andrew Benintendi or Luis Robert trade is happening. I don't want to say soon, but it should happen this offseason, you know, like we have been predicting for, it seems like months now, but I feel like one of them, if not multiple, are on their way out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. That seems like what's about to happen here. So yeah, some interesting decisions for sure. I'm hoping that, you know, Peyton Paulette, Mason Adams, Shane Murphy remain with the organization past December, but we'll see. There's a real chance that any of those guys get taken in the Rule 5 draft. And yeah, we'll keep you updated here on the Future Sox podcast. Stay with us. We'll be updating on socials. Of course, at Future Sox. Dylan is at Not Cease. I am at Elijah EV8. We'll keep you rolling with White Sox news throughout the offseason, and it's going to be really fascinating to see the next steps of the White Sox offseason plan here.
Yep.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.